It is time for the Food Maven, our talk with the Food Maven. Very exciting. Hello, Food Maven. It's Arthur Schwartz.
Hello. You know, this Food Maven thing is getting tired.
So is the actual Maven getting tired, or is the
you know,
term?
It's funny because I only use the word Maven, which is a Yiddish word meaning expert, because there was a computer magazine at the time called Computer Maven.
Right.
And I'm figuring if the computer nerds know the word Maven, then everybody by now must know the word Maven. But I don't think it actually caught on.
And I don't think
the magazine folded soon after.
And I think we could line up 10 people and say, hey, what is Maven? And they would look at you funny.
Like,
two or three.
In Northwest Connecticut, they might. In Brooklyn, it's a regular word.
Right.
But, whether you're Jewish or not.
Well, if you decide to retire, you won't lose your skill.
I did retire the website. The Food Maven came out because I had to name the website the Food Maven. But that's long gone now.
So what do you want me to call you?
Arthur?
Arthur.
Does that work?
Totally.
Okay.
Arthur.
Yes.
Arthur.
Schwartz.
Oh, Schwartz.
My Uncle C's used to call me and my sister Schwartzy.
Right.
Yeah.
Schwartz.
That's okay. By the way, did I ever tell you this? George Soros, is it?
Yes.
You know, his real name is Schwartz.
Oh, are
Hungarian. And the other Schwartz that I always refer to, and I only learned about George Soros fairly recently, that he changed his name, I don't know why, to Soros. But Tony Curtis was Bernard Schwartz, also Hungarian.
Mm-hmm.
And as was my grandfather, Bernard Schwartz, although he was called Barney or Ben, depending on who was calling him.
And Schwartz is black anyway.
Schwartz means black. And now I think his name was William Black, who owned Chock Full of Nuts.
A Heavenly Coffee?
The Heavenly Coffee, but Chock Full of Nuts was actually started as a nut store in Times Square. And then the Depression came, and people were not treating themselves to nuts or going to the theater as much. So he changed it to a coffee shop, smart guy. Anyway, he called himself William Black, but his name was Schwartz. And he, you know, I mean, Chock Full of Nuts was enough of an accomplishment, but he was a really forward-thinking, progressive person who hired Jackie Robinson when he retired from baseball as his
spokesperson, kind of?
No, not at all. Much more.
Partner?
No, he was human resources guy.
Oh,
we
okay.
would now say he was human resources. Jackie Robinson was.
Well,
because it was an outreach to people, into the black community to hire people. And Black paid his employees very well. Well, you know, for a counter waitress, they got paid well because there were no tips in Chock Full of Nuts. He didn't believe in tipping.
Well, this is really interesting because now, even though we have something else to talk about, we're going to spend 2 minutes on the lunacy that has become tipping.
Well, you know, I
don't get me started. So this is my moment to.
Yeah. Let me hear. Because I don't know what's going on in your neighborhood. My neighborhood, we have the, even if it's a no-service situation, it says, you know, they ask you for a tip.
Yeah, no service equals tip. And that's just preposterous. Especially, you know, the initial reason for that was because these guys weren't getting a fair wage. But now that you've upped them, you know, now that you're a deli slicer, with all due respect, not the professional one, you know, the kid that works there for the summer, is you're supposed to pay him $15 an hour to hack away at a ham that he doesn't know how to use. That tip thing it's gone haywire.
I don't know, you know. I don't tip at the deli, even if I use a credit card and it comes up. How much do you want to leave?
No, but most people don't have the, shall we say, spine that you do, and they see
What's
the thing.
What spine? You don't just, they're not even looking at you.
I agree.
Kids behind the counter don't really care.
Yeah, my position.
They don't expect it either. I mean, I went. I charged some baked goods the other day. You shouldn't have to tip the person who hands you your your cake and pie.
You shouldn't have to tip if there's no service.
No, so I didn't. Okay. Pardon me?
I said you shouldn't. It's a service-based thing. Tipping is service-based.
Yes, it is.
End of story.
Yeah, okay. So let's start a new story.
Okay.
Because I dared to put the oven on after saying I couldn't bear the idea even. Because I bought these two lamb chops that I was going to grill. I'm top of the stove. But, I don't know, something got into me. And I didn't want to stand over the stove. Instead, I turned the oven on to 400 degrees. And I made these chops in a way that I have not cooked the lamb chops or lamb anything in 20 years. I used to make this all the time. It's a recipe that's in Naples at Table. And it's sort of dear to my heart. I mean, even when I had no kitchen to speak of in Midtown Manhattan, I was able to make this because it's a one-pot thing, so to speak. Anyway, the first time, what it is lamb, in this case, two shoulder chops. I'll get to that later. Oreganata, oreganated, so to speak. And their only ingredients are lamb, onion, which you will slice thin into half moons, a few canned plum tomatoes. If you use crushed tomatoes out of the can, that's a product you keep in your kitchen, that's fine. Because you're going to crush the plum tomatoes in your hand. Anyway, I'll get to the recipe in a second. And then it goes in the oven. So this is the thing. It's unattended, so to speak. I mean, you have to turn it a couple times. But that's all. So I thought, well, this isn't going to be so bad. I will put this in the 400-degree oven and leave the room. Come back in a half an hour and turn it. Come back in another half an hour and turn it, and that'll be that. And you know what? That was that. And I was in air conditioning during the time the oven was heating up the kitchen, and we really had a good meal. And we don't have to eat this very, very hot. So the first time I had anything like this was 25 years ago at least, Christmas Day dinner at a friend's house in Salerno, and it was not a lamb chops. It was, in fact, a whole baby lamb cut up into pieces, put into a big roasting pan with some olive oil and this. And I do this with the lamb chops or whatever the lamb you can get. In fact, I have made this when I sometimes, once in a while, see lamb, different cuts of lamb on sale. I'll buy a bunch and mix up the cuts of lamb because it's braised. It's all going to turn out tender in the end. So you put it oil a little in the pan, just a little bit because there's fat on the meat, and then put the meat in. Salt and pepper the meat well, and on top of the meat, scatter onion. Now I was making 2 1-inch thick shoulder lamb chops. And what I had was the smallest onion, and I always make sure I have a few small onions in the house for just such an occasion. I don't want a lot of onion here. Just one small onion, cut in half and then cut into slices. Scatter that on top. Then I think I used 3, maybe 4, depending on the size, canned tomatoes crushed in my hand, just crushed right over the onion. And then a good amount of oregano. Now, I have this really nice, fragrant oregano, but it's not aggressively flavored. So I think, measurements on something like this are you have to use your judgment. But I put in 2 heaping teaspoons of my very fragrant but not that aggressive oregano.
Now, speaking of which, because I happen to have right now things are growing. If you have fresh oregano, what would you do?
If you have fresh oregano, dry it.
Okay, fair enough. Go on.
Truly, I mean, you harvest it and hang it upside down in the kitchen. It smells good a couple of days, and then it's dry and you use it. I have always tell this story when somebody asks me about fresh oregano. I don't use fresh oregano. It's not that I don't have it. I don't really like it. It has a different flavor than dried oregano.
Bingo.
But my Neapolitan friend's mother came to New York to actually work in his restaurant, but she lived here for a few months. And she saw that people were using fresh oregano. Now, she's from Naples all her life in southern Italy, and she never used fresh oregano. But she was curious, like, you know, what is this going to be like? And she came up with a use for it that it was so clever. She took tuna steaks and put fresh oregano leaves on top of the tuna steaks. And, in fact, I think she even stacked the tuna steaks so they all had contact with the fresh oregano, and put it in a plastic bag and put it in the refrigerator overnight. And it really did flavor, not in any strong way, but, you know, in a subtle way, the steaks. That was, I don't know, so I never used fresh oregano. But I don't know why you can't. There's no reason why you can't.
But is it the same amount is the real question?
It's going to be tasting. It's going to taste different. And I don't know what the amount would be.
Okay.
That's for sure.
All right.
So, you know, dried, usually we say that you use a third of the amount of dried to fresh. So if I was using 1 teaspoon of dried oregano, to me that would be a tablespoon of, I would say, chopped fresh oregano. So, you know, you can use quite a bit. It's not going to overwhelm the lamb. So... And then, so on top of that, just put a little bit more salt, drizzle a little bit more olive oil over the whole thing. Of course, my friends in Italy use what I consider too much olive oil, so don't be afraid of the olive oil, but you don't need more than a couple tablespoons on top. And then it goes in a 400-degree oven, unattended, as they used to say in recipes. After a half an hour, come back, flip the chops, but spoon the now very wilted tomato-onion mixture back on top, put it in for another half an hour. By now you're getting some good caramelization of these onions and tomatoes, and in fact, in the end, if you get a little black, that's a good thing. So that's it, and then one more half hour, and it's finished. They're going to be melting your mouth tender, well-flavored.
And you make them rest?
Now, it depends on how much you like lamb. Now, this, you could have strong-flavored lamb, and this would be delicious. But, of course, the first time I had it, it was with a baby lamb, and that's white meat, after all, and that's delicious, too. Goat is great with this, done this way.
Well,
anyway, oreganata.
Okay, so sounds yummy. And what...
Oh, let me finish one. I forgot one important thing.
Okay.
So the first time I made this, one chop for each of us, we had all this caramelized goodie stuff in the pan, and I just put it on top of the chops like a condiment. Or it wasn't a sauce, but it was a lot of good stuff. Now, I remembered that when I made this 1,000 years ago, I always used to spaghetti in the roasting pan. There's even a word for this in Italian, insaporire, to insavor. You just put your boiled spaghetti in the roasting pan with the fat and the caramelized onion and tomato and oregano flavor. And if there's too much fat for you, you can spoon off some of the fat. And then you could add some pasta cooking water to the pan, and boy, is that good.
Yeah, that sounds so I was going to ask, what do you serve it with? And that would be...
That's it.
Yeah.
Spaghetti with that.
Yeah. And is
no
it,
cheese. Please, no cheese. But you could put hot pepper on if you want.
But would you, with spaghetti, would you stick with spaghetti, or would you throw in a different...
Well, I think any macaroni will do.
Okay.
We just happen to favor spaghetti. So if there's a reason Bob can get away with insisting on spaghetti.
I got it. All right. So that.
No, no. I now he's okay with penne lately. He hasn't. I must say, I like macaroni for a couple of reasons. You know, there's certain things that just are better with macaroni. I'll give you an example. Pasta and peas. I love making pasta and peas and not much else in there. Depends. There's different ways to go with that. With shell macaroni, because the peas get stuck in the shells.
Which is great. That's a good thing. Yeah, no, that's a real good
thing. You know, if you're making a chunky kind of sauce, you know, with like, you know, big pieces of stuff, then you have to have a kind of, then you have to have some kind of macaroni and not spaghetti, because spaghetti doesn't integrate with it.
Right, but this you're basically getting all the good stuff.
This is basically flavoring the spaghetti.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
Now, but the thing is this, then you don't get to eat that stuff on top of the chops, so you got to make a choice. You could serve it on all, I'll let you serve the pasta and the meat on the same plate. Although Italians wouldn't do that. They would eat the pasta first, and then they'd eat their chop with some vegetable or other.
Right, but in this weather, I'm so excited because about a week ago, there was some lamb that wasn't just like really crazy, ridiculous, expensive. Now, lamb is like nectar. I love lamb.
I prefer lamb to beef these days, except when I can get exceptional beef, which is usually expensive.
True, all true. I don't know.
Well, here's something you're going to love to hear about lamb.
Okay.
I learned this in Ireland. It's not exactly true, but my friend Anne has a like high school friend who is a genius and made a zillion dollars in finance and then became a farmer. and he farms, he's in Ireland, he farms sheep, among other things. So he has a lot of sheep. He said sheep are the only natural meat. Because sheep are not put in a grain feed. They always have to, you know, out be in the pasture and eat natural food. So, of course, it depends on what that grass and blah, blah is like. But it is naturally grazed meat. Well, he was slightly wrong because he didn't account for Colorado. And we have very, very good lamb from Colorado. But it is partially grain fed. So it does have a different texture. It's a sort of, I guess, more fine grained texture. That I mean, you really wouldn't notice it. You'd have to do it. Australian lamb, New Zealand lamb, and American or / Colorado lamb side by side before you saw any big differences. What you do see is that New Zealand lamb is very small. Australian lamb is also small, but not as small. And Colorado lamb, American lamb, is usually the biggest. And so if you see, you know, really large chops, they're probably American lamb. My butcher says his is American lamb, but he's not sure where it's from. The real butcher I go to, meaning, you know, the butcher shop. And he does have very, very good lamb, which has a nice but not too gamey flavor. And an inch thick shoulder chop. Now, there are two kinds of shoulder chops. There's the blade chop and the round bone chop. I don't think I've ever favored one over the other. I just take whatever they have.
I have. I favor one over the other.
Which do you favor?
Round bone.
The round bone.
Yes.
Because is the meat around it more tender?
No, but the bone is such fun.
Oh, the bone is fun, right. We used to do stuff with it when we were kids, didn't
That's
we?
Exactly, like, yeah.
You make a necklace of...
Or a ring.
Well, my fingers probably would never...
Well, anyway,
I think it has to be a pretty big... Yeah, if you're a kid, a lamb bone...
Well,
yeah.
I never
It's got a marrow bone, too.
Right, exactly. So here's the thing. When I was... when I was a kid, you know, we would have it. And then when I, quote, grew up and was cooking my own stuff, for whatever reason, they weren't putting them out. I don't know why. Because it was considered a lower life form of meat. And then one day at the IGA,
you know, the thing is that you have to like lamb to like shoulder lamb. Because it is more flavorful than you know, a rack of lamb is rib chops. That's very mild tasting meat, as it is on a cow, you know. In fact, when I buy rib steaks, which I do frequently, I get a big one, a thick one, and Bob eats the eye, which is that solid piece of lean meat in the middle, and I prefer what I call deckle, but is also called the cap or top of the rib. I was actually talking about this with the young butcher at Whole Foods. Did you know that Whole Foods actually trains young people to be butchers or fish?
Fishmonger. You actually mentioned that at one point.
Yeah.
When this kid
knew a lot. I was very impressed with this kid talking about this. And, you know, the different names for that piece of meat. It's that coarsely textured a piece of meat that's over the eye. Now everybody calls the whole thing the ribeye, which to me is incorrect. To me, a ribeye is just the eye. You know, and in fact, I once... I'll remember.
It doesn't matter.
Famous steakhouse.
What, Frank's?
Ben Benson's.
Okay.
No longer. He's no longer with us. The restaurant's no longer with us. Ben Benson had great meat, but served a rib steak without the cap, without the deckle.
Why?
The reason he gave me was nobody wants it. So he may have been right. In a fancy steakhouse, maybe nobody wants it. But at the butcher, I want it.
Right. No, I have the same thing. So once again, we're going to end with another commentary, hem, because I believe that you could line 10 people up with a diagram of a, you know, you don't even have to do the whole animal. You can just say, okay, you could play, like, pin the tail on the donkey with the cut of meat, because I don't think that people know what it is. They don't really know.
Well, they probably don't. But go online.
I'll go to
your phone. And as people say, go to the Google machine. And you'll find many, many diagrams, meat diagrams, showing you all the different parts. I have to say, this young man at Whole Foods, I don't know how this even came up in conversation. I really had a long talk with him. He smokes meat, and he's been trying to make pastrami, but he says, I can't get it right. It never comes out like, you know, what Katz is or any of the places that I go to. So I sent him somewhere to maybe find out what he's doing wrong. And anyway, he knew. I said, well, first of all, what cut of meat do you use? And he said, brisket. And I said, well, you know, that's not the true cut for pastrami. Old-fashioned pastrami was not made with pastrami. These days it is, but used to be made only with plate. And he said, oh, that's the piece right in front of the ribs, right? I said, yes. It's like the bacon on the beef, and that's
right. Exactly
correct. It's the bacon of the beef.
I just remember, I'll skip the lamb story because, again, we're going to run out of time, but also, you know, some 20 years ago when people became, like, absolutely fat-phobic, foolishly, in my view, you go to the butcher in California, Carmel, to be precise, and order a brisket, and if you don't say with the plate... You get this thing.
Oh, no, you don't mean with the plate. You mean with the point.
No, I mean with the plate.
The plate is another cut, though. The brisket, you're right, in that they all, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody wants their brisket trimmed, which is ridiculous.
Ridiculous. That's all I'm saying. And so literally, and the guy, the butcher was, you want the plate? Yeah, we want the plate. Well, we don't have the plate. Well, I don't want the brisket without the plate. It's pretty much how the...
So, you know, this I haven't seen this now in several years, certainly since before COVID, but Costco used to sell steaks that were just the deckle rolled. In other words, the cap on the rib was butchered off, rolled and then cut like an inch thick, so you had like rolled steaks of Deckel. I'm getting hungry.
I am too, and it's very fitting because we'll talk to you again next week.
Because we got to say goodbye.
Yeah.
I'm not promising any more oven cooking.
That's all right. We'll see what happens.
I just broke down this week. I couldn't take cold food anymore.
I appreciate it. All right. Thank you very much.
Stay dry.
You too.